Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now is Catherine Remlinger. She is professor of English at Grand Valley State University and also the author of Upper Talk, Dialect as Identity in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Kate, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Rick. I'm really happy to be here.
When I saw this come across my desk, I guess I was very excited to talk to somebody, you know, about the Upper dialect. Now, I am not from the area. I have family roots here, but I was born and raised downstate Michigan, so I come up here. And, of course, then the way people talk is very noticeable. And my wife is from, her background is from Virginia and Florida. Mm. And we've been here about 7 years, and I can tell that she's starting to pick up some Upper dialects, some pronunciations, which sound really strange coming from a Southerner. So she might be a study all in herself. But I wanted to ask, kind of just get started with, you know, what first brought you to the Upper Peninsula and to our area? I know that you were from Michigan Tech at one point.
Yeah, so I went to Michigan Tech for my PhD. I was in the rhetoric and what was the rhetoric and technical communications program. I started in 90 and graduated in 95. And excuse me, that's what first brought me here. And then my love of the Copper Country and my research have kept me coming back since then.
What was it about languages or linguistics that interested you from the early on?
It's probably my family background. I had grandparents who spoke German, even though they were lifelong residents of Ohio, and their grandparents spoke German. But my mother did not. But my mother grew up post-World War II. She was born before that. But it was a time when you wanted to show you were American, and how better to do that but speaking English. And so her parents didn't pass on German to her, and in fact probably forbade them, the children, to speak German. But then when I was younger, I went to German-speaking school on Saturday sometimes. My father and mother belonged to a German club. So I had an awareness of different languages from an early age. And it just went on to looking at language and identity at Tech. I studied gender and language and identity and how that affects students' access to education. And then when I was here, I had friends who were local from Painesdale, and we would talk about different dialects, me being from Ohio and them from Painesdale. We had a lot of comparisons to make, and I did a little research at the Tech Library and found there wasn't very much written about English in the Upper Peninsula and how it developed over time and the way that history has shaped it. And I thought, well, after a while and I get settled into my career, I'll start researching this, and I did.
Do you speak a number of languages?
I was a French major in college, so I can speak a little French. I studied German at Tech for a couple years, and I've studied a lot of languages, but I know more about their structure and use rather than being able to speak it.
I'm a big fan of the author J.R.R. Tolkien, and of course, Lord of the Rings. And I also I'm a fan of him as well as his writings, and I love that as, you know, his background was in linguistics, that he was a language expert in the trenches of World War I. To pass the time, he was inventing languages, and what languages he was inventing was, you know, his Elvish and Dwarvish, and his stories came about because he needed to have a background. He needed people who spoke these languages. Mm-hmm. So when people read things like The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, they may be surprised to know that they started out as the languages. That's what his passion was for, and he wrote the stories to give voice to the people that spoke those languages. Mm-hmm. I'm also a big fan of the movie My Fair Lady.
Mm-hmm. Audrey Hepburn.
And one of the interesting parts about the film is when the English gentleman is pinpointing where people's dialects were from in a small area of England, and even could name it within a few streets of London. And I thought that that was pretty interesting, that people in a close proximity would speak a similar dialect. Do we have something similar to that here in the Copper Country? Maybe we have more mixture of languages and families, but certainly you mentioned Painesdale. Mm-hmm. Do people in Painesdale speak the same dialect as those in Calumet?
Well, the people in Painesdale and Calumet might say they don't, but it's fairly the same, and very much like what Henry Higgins saw in or heard in My Fair Lady, what we have here oftentimes are differences based on social class, and that's what he was hearing, Henry Higgins was hearing in My Fair Lady and could pinpoint, and because of how London was structured around social class, working class in one neighborhood and middle class in another, that's what he was hearing. And very similarly, our interactions in our everyday lives affect our dialects here. And if we're working class and we, most of our friends are working class, that will affect how we talk. If we're working class and we have a mix of friends, that will affect. So in linguistics, we call this our social networks, not like Facebook social networks, but who we interact with and how that affects our language use.
In radio, as you're learning the how to talk, they teach you a little bit how to talk. They say the Midwestern dialect is the considered the accepted American dialect. Because if you're in radio, you don't want to be, you don't want to have a New York accent. You don't want to have a Southern accent. You want to have a kind of a middle of the road, which they have identified as Midwestern in America. How much different is the dialect spoken here in the Upper Peninsula as to the general Midwest, because we're still part of the Midwest?
Well, that's interesting because it depends on where in the Midwest you are. So people used to pinpoint Michigan as the downstate Michigan, as the place of the network standard. But vowel sounds have changed in that area, so it's no longer the network standard. And one reason why the Midwest is pointed out as this standard broadcast voice is because as people migrated east to west and south to north, over time, the dialect differences got ironed out or leveled. So there are dialects. I mean, in the Midwest. I'm from Central Ohio, and even recently, one of my friends pointed out, I can hear your Ohio voice in you sometimes. Now, when I get nervous sometimes, I sound like a youper to my students downstate. I don't know what they hear, but that's what they tell me. And I'm not quite sure why I would be nervous in front of them. But anyway, they've told me that. And yet, there is this idea that there's this non-dialect, but everybody has a dialect no matter what. And if you were a radio broadcaster in New York City, you might want to sound like you were from New York, or if you were from Atlanta, Georgia. So it's all very local, yet also, we have this idea of sounding neutral, so people will not pinpoint us as from a certain place. There are differences between the UP and downstate or other parts of the Midwest. And some of those happen to be vowels. So, for example, one of the best examples I can give is sauna, right? And people will say sauna. But that's attached to the word, where people downstate might say sauna. The word pasty, for example, some people might say pasty more. And here I've noticed the ah sound is what we would call lower in the mouth. The tongue goes down lower, so it might sound more like pasty versus pasty. Some other differences are vocabulary. So, for example, this morning I was having coffee at Fifth and Elm, and a woman told me, asked me what I was doing here, and I told her, she said, oh, I love the word pank. And people will say that's very UP and claim it as it's only in the UP, but actually—
What word?
Pank. P-A-N-K. Pank. Do you know that word? Oh, my. Down or make compact. It was probably brought in by the miners because that word is found in other mining regions in Pennsylvania and upstate New York. And so we might say we're going to pank the snow down or pank laundry in a basket or pank berries in a bucket as we're picking berries. So there you go. There's a new word for you. In short, the language will vary on all these levels, pronunciation, vocabulary, even some grammatical features. So here you might hear people say, let's go Shopko, instead of let's go to Shopko. And that's a direct influence of Finnish, because Finnish doesn't have prepositions. And over time, the contact with English and Finnish, which has been a long history in the area, influenced the way that grammatical structure is.
Yeah, I've heard people say, let's go sauna.
Let's go sauna, too. Yeah, instead of to the sauna. But in that case, people might be using sauna as the verb. It's hard to say whether they're saying, let's go sauna, like let's go sing or dance, right? And here, it might be Let's Go to the Sauna. That one might be hard to determine.
I was once pointed out that I don't know how to say Calumet.
Oh, and, Calumet.
And I was like, well, what do you mean? It's Calumet. And so I listened to a number of people. I became kind of aware of how people were saying it. And I guess it's Calumet. Mm-hmm. You know, and I said, well, why is it not just Calumet? It's Calumet. Mm. You know, and so I guess I've been saying it wrong. And I live in Calumet. You know.
Yeah, and as a linguist, I say you're not saying it wrong. It's a really good example of language variation, right? And you're not from there, so you might not be saying it like more local people might say it. Hmm. Another local example is Toivola. Some people say Toivola, and some people say Toivola. And again, it's influence of Finnish. Finnish stresses the first syllable of a word, and so that's where you'll hear Toivola versus Toivola.
Is some of it just, local evolution of words, like those in New Orleans? If you go down and say you're in New Orleans, they're going to look at you funny because you're New Orleans, mm-hmm. you know. And so if you're from Ontonagon, are you from Ontonagon or are you from Ontonagon?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like local development of words over time.
Sure. And ease of pronunciation in some ways. It's a little bit easier. And that doesn't mean it's lazy. Some people think easy is lazy, and that's not the case with language. But Ontonagon, phonologically, is easier to say than Ontonagon, right? Yeah.
Now, you said also it has to do with a little bit with vocabulary and certain words that mean something here that don't mean in other places, like pang, you know, means something,
pank.
You know, pank, mm-hmm. pank, mm-hmm. yeah. That's right. I'm gonna use that when I get home to my wife. It's like, you know, did you pank the laundry today? That's what she says. But other words that have developed that, you know, people outside of this area are not going to know the meaning to.
Mm, and that's, some of them people here don't even realize that it's unique to the area. Bakery's an example where some people here, and again, we have to remember that not everybody is going to use the language the same way. I mean, language varies even in a very small area like the Copper Country. But bakery for some speakers here means the baked goods themselves, not the building where you would buy the baked goods. And this is a direct contact from German. It's a borrowing from German. You find the same use of bakery in Milwaukee and other parts of Wisconsin where German had contact there. That's one example I can think of off the top of my head.
I know also people in this general area, they refer to and it could be this because of the sense of isolation, I don't know, but, you know, we're going to the lake.
Mm.
Well, there's a whole lot of lakes,
yeah.
But the lake is one lake. They're talking about Lake Superior,
right.
Or they talk, you know, of course, another one might be the bridge, you know, cross the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I crossed the Mackinac Bridge, the Sault Ste. Marie Bridge, the Portage Lakelet Bridge, and a number of other bridges during the time, but, you know, the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So those, you know, simplifying or where a word becomes, where it was a generalized noun, you know, becomes more of a proper noun when people say, like, you know, I'm going out on the lake.
Right. And it shows how local that is because people understand when we say the lake, it's Lake Superior. It's not Twin Lake or another lake. Same thing with the bridge. So ways of using language do develop very locally. And that's kind of a shorthand for interacting, right? Why say the lift bridge or Lake Superior when I can say the lake or the bridge and you know what I mean?
Hmm. Those that travel out of our area and they have this dialect, they have this, mm-hmm. you know, an accent too, where it's not as pronounced as, say, somebody from Fargo, North Dakota, mm-hmm. you know, might be. But are we, you know, are Youpers identified pretty quickly as, you know, with their accent?
Yes, and oftentimes they are identified as being Canadian. So in my interviews I did with people, I would ask them, have you ever moved away? And did people comment on the way you talk? And many people would say, yes, when I moved to Texas or I moved downstate, people thought I was from Canada. And what they're hearing are the vowels. And there's another sociolinguist who happens to be at Grand Valley who studies UP vowels or vowels in the UP and has found that the vowel sounds here are very similar to those in Canada in ways. And that's what people are hearing. And there's also the effect people moving away and then changing the way they talk because people will tease them or point out all the time or ask, where are you from? And that way of speaking becomes stigmatized or sometimes associated with negative stereotypes. And that can be influenced by the media. For example, Escanaban to Moonlight, the movie, which is a fun movie to watch, but then can, for some people watching it, might reinforce negative stereotypes. students that I know at Grand Valley, which is outside of Grand Rapids, who are from the Upper Peninsula, have told me that they soon change the way they talk when they come to campus, because they get teased, oh, do you have an outhouse? Do you ride a snowmobile? You know, all of these stereotypes that they don't want to have to put up with. So they change the way they talk to fit in with the local area. And that's probably what's happening to your wife too, right? Yeah. How else do you fit in but using your language as a badge of identity? Hey, I live here. I'm one of you.
Yeah, but so Canadians, you always say that they say A mm. a lot. So the Upers don't say A, it's more of a hey.
There's two kinds. There's A and there's hey. And there's a student at Michigan Tech who did a study on A and hey. And she was a student of Vicki Bergvall's, who was also my advisor at Tech. And found that A and hey, like I said, were used differently. Some, and I can't remember, I'm really sorry, off the top of my head, how they were used. But those probably come from British speakers who came and settled here, very much Cornish English. It might have come from Ojibwe or Anishinaabemowin, because that language also has a tag question, yeah. Very much, or it could have come from the French voyageurs, because French Canadian has yin that's used the same way. And because the French voyageurs and Anishinaabe mixed and mingled a lot, and because Cornish had a Cornish English had a lasting influence on the language here, because they were some of the first English speakers to arrive and were held up as the model of English speakers. Those three languages probably brought us the A, but we're not sure which one was the definitive, you know, parent of our use here.
So interesting to learn the background of some of these things. And our, you know, our dialect up here is just permeated with them, like things like you betcha, you hear those type of things. And I'm sure I'm listening to a few at the top of my head. I should ask you, just, you know, what are some other examples?
You betcha is a really good one. So when people ask me, you know, what I do or what my research is, and I said, well, I study English and how it's developed and changed over time in the UP. And oftentimes they say, you betcha, or they'll say, you betcha, and then they'll say, holy wah. Holy wah is another one, you know, and there's a big debate where that might come from, but I won't get into that right now. Those are two really common ones. And one of the things is tourism has really increased our awareness of this. So you can buy buttons that say Holy Wah and You Betcha. And of course, the bumper sticker that Jack Bowers and Marquette developed and promoted since 1983, Say Yada to UPA, right? And that's another thing people will often say back to me. So it's really interesting to me how the economics of tourism has influenced our awareness and what we think a dialect is by reinforcing certain dialect features and not others. You never see pank on a bumper sticker or bakery, but you see these other duh, for example, in A and ya are super ubiquitous.
Now, your book, Uber Talk, Dialect as Identity in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. So I guess I've been more focusing on like a local dialects here, but of course the Upper Peninsula is, you know, one third the size of Michigan here. So how much does it change if you're going from Sault Ste. Marie over to Watersmeet?
I'm glad you asked that for a couple of reasons. One, I'll answer your question, but also my dialect area or my research area focused on Marquette and the northwest of the UP. So the Copper Country over to Marquette. And the dialect in the area changes a lot, and not just because of the vast expanse, that's a huge part of it, but also settlement patterns. So the people who settled in Sault Ste. Marie, even though there were French, of course, you can tell from the name, English speakers, and because of its proximity to Canada. If you go over to Ontonagon, it's closer to what you, or the dialect would be closer to what you would hear here. And if you go down toward the Wisconsin border, there's, again, a lot of similarities, even though people might say on one side of that state line that, no, they sound really different in Wisconsin, and no, they're completely different in Michigan. There's a lot more similarities, and a lot of it's because we want to claim our identity as being Upers or from, you know, Wisconsin. So the expanse as well as where people settled and the languages that influenced it. So Iron Mountain, for example, had a high proportion of Italian speakers, and that would have influenced the dialect there.
Well, how important is it to the people that live here to maintain those dialects? Because as just through the march of time, through proliferation of radio and television and, you know, other languages and people moving in and out of the area, it has to start leveling off at some point, because now the more intermixing you have of people and dialects, the less pronounced they're going to be.
Yeah, and language is always going to keep changing. And oftentimes what we think is attrition or language loss or the dialects are dying, they're not dying out, they're just changing. And you bring up a couple really strong factors. One of language contact and dialect contact is people mix and mingle, and especially in an area like Houghton where we have a university and people from a lot of different areas, not just from the U.S., but around the world come in, that can affect language. But we also have a really strong attachment to place and identity, and those two things often help us preserve, or maybe not preserve, but language will change, and there are some dialect features that will still mark us as being from whatever place. And oftentimes we're not even aware of it. So I don't think we have any fear that dialects in the UP or any place else are dying out. And in fact, some linguists have found that they're getting stronger, because how else do we show where we're from and who we are in this global world that we have now, you know, where you go through any small town or city and there's a strip mall with all the same shops. How else do we show who we are and where we're from but through our language?
With a lot of the other identifying dialects, just, you know, looking at the different parts of the U.S., and we've talked about some of those, you know, New York or New Jersey, Southern accents. They create that sort of negative connotation, you know, that if you talk that way, that, you know, you must not be intelligent enough to talk normal. Is there a push to leave that behind? And just, I guess, focusing on the Upper Peninsula, on the people that live here, or to embrace it?
I think there's both. You know, schooling is a huge force in trying to create a standard way of speaking, but there really is no standard spoken English. Everybody has a dialect. We have more standards when it comes to writing. And in schooling, it makes sense, because we want students to succeed in school, and success in school depends on using language in particular ways. The media also has a strong effect, right? So films or memes that you see can affect the attitudes that we have. And in fact, one chapter I have in the book, I go beyond the UP to look at how media has influenced what we know about different dialects throughout the U.S. and how our language attitudes are really a mirror what we think about different groups of people. So there's a strong correlation between linguistic prejudice and social prejudice. And for me, if we can understand where the history behind a dialect or how someone uses language or why, then we can perhaps understand that there's nothing related to language and intelligence. There's no connection between how we speak and our levels of intelligence. It might reflect our levels of education, but not how smart we are, right? And there's a big difference there. So those would be some things that I think are really important to keep in mind, that we're still going to have variation. There's nothing wrong with it from a linguistic standpoint. It's our perceptions and attitudes that makes for some people think that, oh, that's a bad way of speaking, when it's not.
When people become successful or famous and they're leaving, like, say, from the South, and they try to lose that Southern accent, do we know of anybody that's, you know, would be a good example of somebody who's famous that really speaks a Upper accent, or because there's a lot of people from this area, but you do not hear it, you know, unless it's in jest or being overly pronounced in a movie or something with the "you betches" and stuff.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head, usually because when we're in a public setting, we put on our best voice, right? Or the one we want to be socially acceptable. Even right now, the way I'm talking to you probably isn't the way that I'd exactly talk to you if we were having pizza and beer over at the Ambassador, right? So there's going to be the social setting's going to affect it. So I can't. That's a good question. I can't think of an example.
A couple of weeks ago, I was able to visit Boston, and through the normal travels of Boston, everybody just sounds normal. And I even made a comment. Boy, I don't see anybody, speaking that Boston accent, the Pock the Cop. Mm. And then somebody said, yeah, they kind of pointed out a couple people. So then I opened up my ear a little bit, and then I'm like, okay, now I got it. So it was subtle, but it was definitely there. I don't know if I would have been able to pick them out, but having been a tourist now in somebody else's neck of the woods and hearing how they speak, it was interesting, to see them talking like that. And to them, of course, it's normal. And I wonder how I sounded like to them.
Yeah.
Talk with people from a foreign country, and they're, somebody whose primary language is speaking French, and they're trying to speak English. It's like, oh, well, I can tell they're French. Well, when we're over in France and we're trying to speak French, they could tell.
Oh,
they can
right tell off the bat. American. You're an American, aren't you?
How well known is the Upper dialect worldwide? People, of course, identify the Southern and then New York. I picked those kinds out. Are we ever going to get to the point where somebody says, oh, you must be from Iron Mountain?
I can't say. I don't have a crystal ball that will tell me that. But my gut tells me that probably not. And there's evidence of this. Jeopardy, the big trivia TV show, right, has had Upers or Uper talk or dialect questions about the UP on that show 3 times. Trivia is based on little-known facts, and because there have been questions related to the UP 3 times on there since 2003, I have a feeling it's not going to be the world-recognized dialect we might like it to be anytime soon. And another piece of evidence is most people don't know what Upers are outside of maybe Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and the Upper Peninsula, even in the state, adjacent to Michigan, Ohio, where I'm from, most people don't know what a Uper is unless they've had some kind of contact with the UP or people from the Upper Peninsula.
My guest has been Catherine Remlinger. She is a professor of English at Grand Valley State University. Her book, Uper Talk, Dialect as Identity in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Kate, if somebody wanted to be able to get that book, how can they do that?
They can buy it from any bookseller. The Michigan Tech Bookstore has it. Finlandia's Bookstore has it. And I'm not sure where else locally, but those are 2 places I know about.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. I really enjoyed talking with you today.
I did too. Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.